Next up on Off Duty, everything you ever wanted to know about tequila.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello and welcome to another Off Duty podcast where we talk about all things food and drink. I'm Kevin Sintemong.
And I'm Beth Cracklauer.
It's Cinco de Mayo this week, which means that copious amounts of tequila will be consumed.
I bet a large percentage of that tequila will end up in frozen margaritas. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right. I mean, it's like the frozen margarita, that's even more than American than apple pie these days.
Totally.
Yeah. But there's so much more to tequila and tequila-based cocktails beyond the frozen margarita. Here to teach us more about all those things is a true legend in the bar industry, one of the most respected authorities on tequila, Julio Bermejo of San Francisco's Tommy's Mexican Restaurant. It's a tequila and margarita mecca, if there ever was one. And Tommy celebrates its 50th anniversary this year, which is truly amazing. Julio, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So perhaps we should start talking about the Tommy's Margarita, which I wrote about this week in my cocktail column. For those people who don't know, it's a super simple, more elegant version of the margarita that a lot of people are familiar with. You created it in the mid-90s, and it's really become a classic since then. Can you tell us how that drink came to be? I remember when we chatted first about it, you told me it was almost like an ongoing mission to get people to appreciate tequila more.
Yes, indeed. It is, or it was, and it is. But just one shout out to the frozen margarita, because there's a gentleman in Texas who I was very honored to meet one day as he visited Tommy's. He created the frozen margarita machine, and that first machine is actually in the Smithsonian. So
wow.
Even though, you know, it has become a little bit ubiquitous, and maybe the ingredients may not be what a lot of people today are looking for, he really did a groundbreaking job in creating that and bringing, you know, the frozen margarita to the masses, if we can say that.
Right, right.
Well, so back to the Tommy's, you know, indeed, it was a progression, because my idea that I really wanted to convey to our guests was a margarita that was spirit-led or tequila-led, and even more specifically, 100% agave tequila-led. You know, I had become fairly disenchanted with the fact that, you know, margaritas were just cocktails to be consumed in large quantities with very mediocre ingredients, you know, and
right.
We just thought, my God, how can that be possible when there are people that are making really good tequilas and doing things the right way? There must be a way to convey their work through this incredible cocktail without changing it or trying to cover it up.
Right.
So what kind of tequila were you using in it back then, or how was that different from what was being used in margaritas at that time?
Oh my God! So, you know, when I was legally responsible to take over the bar at Tommy's, you know, we were still pouring mixto tequila, or 51% agave, 49% other sugars, and basically in Northern California, the main brands were second labels of the big people. So Matador for Cuervo, Hero from Sauza, or Juarez. And they were really brands that didn't even exist in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Matador did not. Hero did at one time. But they were really American-created brands that were inexpensive, brands of tequila meant to be poured in quantity. And even though, you know, the price was quote-unquote right, you know, once I started learning more and more, it just wasn't good enough. So we decided over 30 years ago to put 100% agave tequila in the well. And again, like Kevin correctly implies, it took for the guests to understand the change and why that changed. And people that have no idea that that there is tequila that's 100% agave and truly representative of the category. But at least we're trying to sell them every day.
Well, actually, I think it would be kind of helpful right now to have just like a really quick little primer on tequila, the different categories. Can you just walk us through that quickly?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, tequila and actually mezcal are two of the five great denomination of origin spirits in the world. So they share the exact same status as cognac, Armagnac, and scotch. Most people don't even know that. You know, bourbon does not have that status. Pisco, cachaça are trying to fight for it. But Mexico is very blessed to have those two products. Now, specifically to tequila, tequila is defined as a distilled spirit made within the denomination of origin region in Mexico, where a minimum of 51% of the alcohol must be produced from the fermented juices of agave tequilana Weber blue variety, and where the other 49% of the alcohol can come from any other sugar source except another agave source. Now, the kind of tequila that we only sell at Tommy's and the best tequila, which is not debated and not disputed, is 100% agave tequila. That tequila comes entirely from the fermented sugars of agave tequilana Weber blue variety. By law, all tequila is at least double distilled. And once it's double distilled, you end up with five categories that are available to the consumer. And those categories are joven or gold, which is just can be clear tequila with caramel added for color, or it can be a younger tequila with older tequilas added in, which is a new trend for certain high-end products. Then we go to blanco. Blanco tequilas, by law, can be aged up to 59 days, but generally speaking, are unaged. And those are the tequilas that are interesting for people to learn about if they have a desire to learn about the characteristics of the raw material. If we take blanco and then proceed to age that spirit 2 months to 1 year, we get the most popular category of tequila in Mexico, which is called reposado, or in repose or rested, which is what our house tequila is at Tommy's at the moment. If we take blanco tequila again and now age from 1 to 3 years in barrels no larger than 600 liters in size, we get añejo or extra aged tequila. And finally, if we take blanco and age for a minimum of 3 years in barrels no larger than 600 liters in size, we will get extra añejo tequila, or in English, ultra añejo. And those are the categories. They can be made in two classes, as I mentioned. One is 51-49, and the other, of course, is 100% agave.
You know, tequila's popularity has, like, boomed since, I think I read that since the mid-1990s, demand has tripled. So a topic that comes up a lot when people are talking about tequila is sustainability, you know, whether we're going to have enough in 2026 and onwards. Do you think the industry is prepared for this rise in demand, especially if it continues to go the way it has?
Yeah, Beth, that's a great question because, you know, tequila has had the great fortune to be on this unprecedented trajectory of growth for the last 40 years in the United States, which is the largest market in the world for tequila. And, you know, savvy agave producers look not year by year, but generation by generation. Now, you know, my brother-in-law, Carlos Camarena, whose family owns Tequila Tapatio, has a wonderful saying, and it's very simplistic and it's almost too obvious, but because the trends that pertain to tequila are predicated on the life cycle of the plant, he simply says those that are prepared for gluts and shortages prepare themselves, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, But we see that every generation, we experience a glut or shortage. And the shortages occur when non-traditional agave farmers take their agaves and their fields off of the market because they have no success selling agave when there's a glut. Now, when that said shortage comes and agave prices triple, quadruple, et cetera, non-traditional farmers will come back onto the market, plant agave, and along with all the plants that are being planted by traditional agave farmers, in the next 8 years, there's going to be another glut. And the same thing happens over and over. However, the companies and the families that make this their business have prepared quite well. I think the only real danger is honestly if China falls in love with tequila.
Uh-huh.
Now, China as a marketplace is generally prestige and price driven, and a lot of times they may not exactly know what they're consuming, but if it has a high price or some sort of status to it, they'll jump on it. But people have been preparing for that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the short term, we're okay with that. And honestly, I don't see, I think every producer would love if China would become another United States, but that's what every single producer of every single product has looked to China for, and it hasn't really been realized.
Right, right. Now, what are some of your favorite tequilas that you think would be a good introduction to someone who wants to savor tequila more? I don't want to say sipping tequilas, but let's call, you know.
Across the platform for all uses, whether the guest enjoys sipping it or mixing it in cocktails,
mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating that there are some tequilas that are really terroir-driven. So,
right.
So amazingly, you know, this category of distillate is the most terroir-driven in the world. And we can still find really great products at fair prices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for example, in the Blanco category, something from the Highlands would be Espolón Blanco, Siete Leguas Blanco, Tapatío Blanco, Pueblo Viejo Blanco.
Mm-hmm.
A Valley Blanco would a very nice one would be Los Abuelos Blanco or Herradura Blanco. Something like José Cuervo Platino, mm-hmm. you know, would be interesting. You know, moving the Reposado.
Before you go on, can you just quickly explain sort of the difference between Highland and Valley?
Sure. So, you know, even though tequila by law can be made in certain counties of five Mexican states, approximately over 95% of it comes from the Mexican state of Jalisco. And we'll generalize and say that in Jalisco, there are two principal producing areas of tequila. One is called the Valleys of Tequila and Amatitan, you know, erroneously called the Lowlands, but for ease of speak, sometimes used. And then there's the Highlands. Now, both of these areas are extremely different in terms of soil composition, elevation, rainfall, daytime, nighttime temperatures, and they produce agaves that, again, even though we're using the same species of plant,
mm-hmm.
produce very different tasting tequilas. And the flavor profiles, for example, in Highland tequilas, when they're young, tend to gravitate towards citrus fruitiness and spiciness.
Okay.
And young tequilas from the valleys of Amatitan and tequila tend to be more herbaceous, more vegetal, earthier, you know, and greener.
Right.
And neither one is better or worse. They're both magnificent and have great qualities about them each.
Right, right. And so you were going to recommend some reposados next, right?
Yeah, so some reposados that I would recommend from the Highlands Pueblo Viejo Reposado from the Highlands, El Tesoro Reposado, Siete Leguas Reposado from the Valley. You know, Herradura is the quintessential Reposado.
Uh-huh.
Also, you know, on a very basic note, you know, Sauza Ornitos or Sauza Three Generations. You can also throw in Partida Reposado. And, you know, in Añejo from the Highlands, you know, Don Julio Añejo has a beautiful honeyed grapefruit note to it. Corzo Añejo is delicious. And then some Valley Añejos. So things that are very oak-driven would be a product like 1800 Añejo. Would also be, say, Los Abuelos Añejo are really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the public shouldn't be scared of the prices of some extra Añejos, even though they can be very high. There are also some really nice things that are reasonably priced, you know, from the Highlands. You know, El Tesoro Paradiso and San Matias Gran Reserva are really phenomenal bargains that can be sipped and at their prices still be used in cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the Valley, something like Jose Cuervo Reserva de la Familia is really a beautiful oak-driven, maybe almost bourbon-esque-like tequila, if people want to try that in their favorite mixed drink or in a nice glass.
Right, right. Julio was guest bartending in Brooklyn, where I live, and you graciously gave me some... it was the Don Julio 42, right, which is extra Añejo?
Don Julio 1942 is an Añejo.
It's Añejo,
that is
okay.
It's really delicate and delicious and hints of vanilla and soft citrus, soft cooked citrus. It's really magnificent. I'm glad you liked it.
It was great. And you know, I'm a big whiskey fan, and I felt very, very comfortable just sipping that Añejo. Now, I want to get to cocktails here. So, everyone knows the margarita, but from my understanding, that's much more popular stateside than it is in Mexico, where the tequila cocktail of choice is the Paloma, right?
Correct.
Right. And
correct.
And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the Paloma, and I know you have sort of a unique take on it that you serve at Tommy's as well.
Yeah, the Paloma is really a standard in Jalisco and in many parts of the area surrounding Jalisco.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, tequila consumption has been very regional, but the Paloma is a simple drink made in a highball glass that one fills with ice, adds a little pinch of salt, a squeeze from maybe half a lime,
mm-hmm.
and then adds his or her favorite tequila. And tops it with squirt, with Mexican squirt, a grapefruit-like soda.
Mm-hmm.
And it is incredibly simple to make, incredibly refreshing while you're at your favorite or actually anywhere in the world, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
But we make a twist on it that came about from one of our guests that we happened to take to Mexico a little bit over 20 years ago. And he simply, he's a chef and a baker and a geologist and almost a jack of all trades. And when he saw the Paloma being made, he just mentioned, you know, why don't you guys just force carbonate your own ruby red grapefruit juice? And as simple as that statement was, and as easy as it is to execute, it created a Paloma on a different level that is so much more delicious as it already is, and almost dangerously smooth,
right?
Because there is really no substitute for fresh juice. And believe it or not, force carbonating it preserves it for at least a week, which is really amazing. So it's not one of these things that even for the bar that they'll have to throw away because the juice is turned. It's really a phenomenal way to make a Paloma.
Right.
And we call it the Dr. Kern Paloma.
And this was, when did you create this drink? This was
No, I did not create it. It was created by my guest, Dr. Kern McNutt.
Right.
And he just suggested that, maybe about 15 to 18 years ago.
Okay.
On his first distillery trip with us.
Wow. So that's like predates kind of all the sort of molecular, like way before people were playing with carbonation in cocktails.
Well, with the exception of Maestro Dario Comenia, who's been experimenting with molecular mixology for 30 years,
uh-huh.
and he's literally written the book on it.
Right.
So it certainly was not common. I mean, it would have been amazing if SodaStream existed back then.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Paloma, either Dr. Kern's version or sort of the more traditional version, sounds delicious. And I urge everyone to sort of Margarita's great. Tommy's Margarita's great, but definitely try the Paloma this Cinco de Mayo as well.
Can I make one more suggestion?
Yeah, of course.
You know, one of the amazing things about agave distillates and about specifically to tequila, you know, when we were talking about the categories and how there's unaged tequila and subsequently tequilas with more age, well, that versatility of range for tequila allows tequila to be used in many applications in cocktails. So, for example, if you have a spirit-led cocktail that's oak-driven, mm-hmm. we'll use an añejo, obviously.
Right.
You have a spirit-led cocktail that uses an unaged spirit, we'll use a blanco.
Right.
And everything in between. I'm not necessarily saying that tequila is just a plug-in spirit for any cocktail in the world, but it does have an incredible range of versatility that can certainly be enjoyed with some of the new interpretations of classics that are popular today, like the Manhattan or the Old Fashioned, for
right.
example.
Right, right. Yeah, it's one of my kind of favorite drinks is the Oaxacan Old Fashioned, which is an Old Fashioned
yeah.
with agave syrup and an extra añejo or añejo, and añejo. But it's, yeah, absolutely super simple, delicious, created by Phil Ward here in New York, I believe.
At
Mayagüel, and it's a classic. But tequila is just so versatile, so delicious, and you should be consuming it all year round, not just on Cinco de Mayo.
Thank you, and also make sure the guest knows there's an incredible range of price in tequila, and some of it is a little bit gimmicky because there's fancy bottles, but there are also people making artisanal tequilas that really deserve mention,
mm-hmm.
Don't be scared or by some high prices when indeed they're related to a truly artisanally crafted product.
Right.
You know, one product that I'm particularly really happy about happens to come from the largest producer of 100% agave tequila in the world, Patron.
Uh-huh.
They have a line called Roca that is at higher ABV, but made completely the way tequila was made 400 years ago.
Right.
And it's really fascinating and very good.
Right, right.
You know, and as proof that a really big company can do whatever it wants and create whatever products they want.
Right.
So,
yeah, the Roca really Patron is special. Julio, I feel like we've learned so much. We would love to have you back on to talk more tequila. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and I hope everyone has a responsible Cinco de Mayo. And like you say, Kevin, always enjoy anything alcoholic if you're of adult age in this country. But responsibly and in the company of great friends.
Absolutely.
Excellent advice. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can find more great shows on WSJ.com podcasts. And you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and now on the Google Play Store. And if you liked this show, tell a friend, won't you?